Good evening. I just wanted to start off by saying something in particular that I was reading recently. Bnei Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, and we talk about the various things that they had to change their lifestyle. And we think about that they didn't have a Shabbos. Of course, the Egyptians didn't have a Shabbos. But interestingly enough, Egyptian culture, if we do some research, the Egyptians had what they would call, but they had a 10-day work week. It was a 10-day week, and we find that a little funny because we take it for granted that there are 7 days in a week because it seems to go back to the beginning of time. But in Egyptian culture, they had 10 days in a week, and every 10 days they would have a day's vacation, or at some periods of time it would be once in 2 weeks, or in other words, once every 20 days. How they figured out a year remains unclear. But nevertheless, that's how they didn't give the days a name, but they counted every 10 days was a day off. Interestingly enough, just a thought process. And an all right, now we'll start on the parsha. Very interestingly enough, by the way, I'll be away after tonight. I'll be away for a couple of weeks, and so I wanted to say something in terms of Kisisa, maybe during the week, if I'm allowed to tape during the week at a different time, because I'll be in Israel. But anyhow, getting back to the parsha, it starts off, Yatot Tetzaves B'nei Yisrael, B'ichu Elech Hashem and Zayizok, Kosis Lamar. God tells Moshe to tell Aaron at this juncture, strangely enough, he tells him at this point in time, before the Mishkan is built, that to appoint Aaron as the Kohen Gadol and his two sons as his alternate. And that's what he tells him to do. And of course, Nadav and Avihu, who was still alive at this time, to take his four sons, and they would be the Kohanim as well, to assist him. Of course, that brings around the whole point of why the Kohuna, if at this juncture, if it was before the Egel, it would still be the Bechorim. But nevertheless, this could be just at this point for the first Kohen Gadol to be this way. But the reason he had to tell Aaron right now before all of this happened was because Moshe fully expected at this point in time, according to some commentaries, that he wanted to be the Kohen Gadol, and therefore to appoint his two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, as his assistants instead of Nadav and Avihu and Elozar and Isamar. And now, to Moshe's disappointment, he was told to tell Aaron, to tell Aaron, his brother, and their children that they would be, Aaron would be the Kohen Gadol. And interestingly enough, there are various commentaries here that Moshe was mitzkayer, he was aggravated. He wanted so much that now that his children were with him, he wanted to have them, you know, be with them and have them grow along with him at this point for the last 40 years of his life. But nevertheless, that wasn't to be. And what the commentaries are talking about over here, why would that be? Why was Aaron chosen rather than Moshe himself? And one of the Mefarshim makes a very interesting point getting to the topic at hand. And it says the reason that Aaron was appointed Kohen Gadol because Aaron was married to Elisheva Bas Aminadab, meaning that she was the sister. Aaron's brother-in-law was Nachshon ben Aminadav, which is a great person. And since his wife was the sister of Nachshon, she had great yichus and would make a fine wife of a Kohen Gadol. And therefore, Moshe being married to a woman who was a Gioret, she grew up a non-Jew. But that seems not to be, not the whole story. And to fill in the blanks in the story over here is a very interesting thought process. We know who is a Kohen Gadol allowed to marry. We learned that in Parshas Emor, probably touched upon it last year. Kohen Gadol has to marry somebody, a woman who's from birth, and not a Grusha, not an Almana even. Now, the question that a lot of people have is, what did an Almana do wrong? And the answer is, why should she suffer and not be able to marry a Kohen Gadol? Or, you know, for what reason? What did she do wrong? We understand the Grusha, because the terms, the reason somebody would want to divorce his wife, according to Beis Shammai, is that im kein motzei bo erevos dabar. She had to have done something wrong and not been faithful on some level and therefore that's the only grounds for divorce, and therefore she must be a not only a Grusha, but she's probably been a Zona as well. So that brings that about. But an Almana, the question is why? And the answer is that an Almana has had a previous husband, and if her previous husband was a normal, regular, ordinary person who had a 9-to-5 job, so to speak, and came home and was regularly at home, had regular hours, that was what she was used to. And now the Kohen Gadol would be somebody who was not home. Moshe himself, of course, obviously that was the problem in his marriage. He was never available. And Aaron, being the Kohen Gadol, would also put great restraints on his married life, and he wouldn't be around a lot. We know that the Kohen Gadol, all through the ages of the Beis HaMikdash, he had to be separated from his wife for many periods of time, especially in the Yom Tov, Yom Kippur time, various things he had to be away, and he would be very busy various other times, and he wouldn't have a lot of time for family life. And the fact remains that since Tzipora was a woman who was a Gioris, so she was brought up in a different way, and she would expect to have a husband who was available, and that we see is part of the problem why initially they were divorced, and then when they got back together, we find in Parshas Bahalosa, when it says at the end of the parsha, Vatidaber Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe al odos u'isho hakushis asher lo koch. And Miriam and Aaron were complaining about Moshe not being Tzipora. Had supposedly, according to the commentary, Tzipora had complained that she has, Moshe is unavailable, and they don't have a normal married life as a husband and wife, and it distresses her very much. And because he's a Navi, and so Miriam and Aaron said, we're also Neviim, and we also have a very difficult life, but yet we carry on a normal married life with under those restraints. But nevertheless, of course, God stepped in and came to the aid of Moshe, Moshe being the honor that he was. But there are two things here at play. When it says, Alodos huishor asher kushis hakushis asher lokoch, because he married a Cushis, what does that really mean? Of course, there are different forms, not because he just married a dark woman, for an Ethiopian woman, but rather that he married a woman who was not a Jew and therefore didn't understand the parameters of being the wife of a Jew who would be a Kohen Gadol or somebody in the stature of Moshe who would not be able to carry on with the life of a husband who had been away for so long. On the other hand, the wife, the sister of Nachshon, Elisheva Bas Aminadav, was brought up in a very frum household, in a understanding being frum from birth. She understands completely and totally what her life will be as the wife of a Kohen Gadol. She understands that he would not be home for great lengths of time and would be concerned with the nation of Israel at that time. So Alodos Uishor HaKushis Asher Lokoch answers another question, because we know at that time Miriam got Zoraz. Why not Aaron? If they both spoke about them, why not? Of course, there's one answer that says that Aaron had to be unblemished by Zoraz so that he could pronounce that Miriam had Zoraz, because only a Kohen could do that, make that determination. But nevertheless, that wouldn't have to be. Moshe certainly could have said it at that time, being there as well. But regardless, the fact is that Aaron was not complicit with Miriam. It was the one Miriam mentioned first. She was the one who spoke out against Moshe. And Aaron listened rather than spoke. But each brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam, had a different agenda, different thoughts going in my mind. She was talking about what Zipporah had in her mind, not being able to live with a husband as a husband and wife. Whereas Aaron was dealing with the thought process that he was thinking of was the fact that she married a non-Jewish woman and she wouldn't be able to handle the rigors of being married. And we can tell, and I would be remiss not to say that in my life as a rabbi, and any rabbi could tell you the same thing, he has many restraints, many constraints on his time. Even now, when I, so to speak, I don't have a regular job anymore. I'm just a rabbi in a shul, but so I don't have a 9-to-5 job. But nevertheless, I learn a good part of the day. And it's very difficult when you're home and you learn if your wife doesn't understand. Sometimes she needs you, but you're not available, and there you are. And if the wife, to have a good wife, which, you know, she has to understand, or she, if she does, great. And so the wife, the man, that a spouse that a man or a woman has makes a big difference in your life. And they have to be, you know, if they understand and are able to get along with the situation and deal with it in the proper way, which Elisheva Bas Aminadab would, was the reason that Aaron was chosen to be the Kohen Gadol, because God knew that she would get it, so to speak. On the other point is that we noticed that there are 8 clothing that the Kohen Gadol wears. The regular Kohen wore 4 things, Ketonis, Tashpeis, Mitzneves, Ve'avneit, and the tzitz and various things. And, of course, there was a lot of remuzim, a lot of symbolism in all the garments that they wear. And then nothing is said. There's only one garment that it actually, strangely enough, the only one garment does it says immediately what the purpose of the garment is. It says, Vasei lochem michnasayim, the pants. You know why you're wearing pants? It's not for any other reason, was lechasos pesareva, because you have to wear pants. It's very simple. That's the only one of the 8 begotten that the Kohen wears that it expressly says at the beginning of the parasha, the reason for them. Of course, we discussed, I think, last week, the choshen and the ephod. But what I wanted to get into is say something about parashas Kisisa, which really interests me in terms of one very important thing. We know what happened at the Egel, but the question is, of course, it's very simple to understand. When God says to Moshe, Lech Reid Ki Shichei Samecha, he tells Moshe while he's on Har Sinai to go down, because your people are, you know, they have been, they're being destructive, so to speak, and you have to deal with them. But the interesting thing is the terminology of Amecha. What does Amecha mean, your people? All of the people are your people, but Amecha meaning not B'nai Yisrael, because God didn't intend for the Erevav to leave Mitzrayim when Moshe let them go along. So God is putting it squarely in his lap, Amecha. And how do we know that these were the Erevav who were the instigators of the Maaseh Egel? Because it says very simple, we have it twice, when Aaron recounts the story, and the Chumash tells the story, it says, Ela Elohecha Yisrael, this is your God, you Jews. Now, who would say you Jews? A fellow Jew wouldn't say you Jews. Our God, they would say. Therefore, it had to be the Erevav, the peoples who were the mixed multitude, as the English translates. These were the instigators of the Egel. But nevertheless, why didn't they do something about it? The rest of the couple of million people could have quelled this whole insurrection. And how did this come about? The question is always, as the Nesiv HaShalom may ask the question, it's almost unthinkable to think, imagine if you actually saw the throne of glory, the heavens opened up at Matan Torah, and you actually saw the throne of glory with the angels, and you were able to experience God on that level, how could you sink to such a depth 49 days later, a very short time later, 6-7 weeks, and finally sink to the depths of building a golden calf and to reach to that level? And then the Sivas makes a very interesting point, and he says over here, we take it for granted, we are born and we have the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, meaning we have this little voice in our head when something presents itself and we have a taiva, we have a desire to do something wrong or do something good, and we have these little thoughts, should I or shouldn't I do it? So we have this guilty conscience that prevents us from doing certain things, and that God put this into our minds as a stopgap. What happened here, as the Nesivos points out, is a very interesting thing. He says that God, this was a test case, meaning as follows, that God was of the opinion at this juncture in time, since they had seen the throne of glory, since they had experienced God as nobody else had previously experienced, that he could trust them. These people would never sink to the depths of having a golden calf. They could not do that. It just was beyond them. They have seen the glory, and this would never happen. And he turned off the switch, so to speak. He flipped the switch, and suddenly their Yetzer Hara gets the best of them. And this is what happens. And where do we see that elk? And the reason he tells this story is that he tells the story in reference to Elisha ben Avuya, Rav Meir's Rebbe, Elisha ben Avuya, who was the greatest Tana of his time growing up. And all the rabbis of his era had thought he would ascend to the greatest things. And we have that famous story in Gemara, Chagiga, that says Arba Nechnasu Lepardes, and only they ascended, whatever that means. They went up to Shemayim, whether it was an out-of-body experience at Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Rebbe Kiva, and Elisha ben Avuya, and the only one who came down in one piece, so to speak, mentally stable was Rebbe Kiva. Ben Azai died, Ben Zoma sort of lost it to some degree, and Rebbe Kiva, Yatzah B'Shalom, but Elisha ben Avuya went over to the dark side. He became an agnostic, and of course the Gemara asked the question, what would make somebody go to the dark side? And of course, there are various stories, but the point is, this is where the Nesivos makes the point of saying Elisha ben Avuya had reached such a high madrega, such a great level of spirituality and yichrumkeit, that God, this was a test, because he reached that level, that God was of the opinion he could turn off the switch and live, let this person live with his own mindset. He would never go off the derech. It just wouldn't happen, but it shows us that it did. Of course, the question over there is what the Mefarshim on that place say, that what he saw was that point. The Marsha makes a point of saying that, unfortunately, there's one angel, Metatron, who is, so to speak, God's Secretary of State, if you want to see, if you want to call it that, Lahavdil. But nevertheless, he's sits next to God, keeping the records. And when Elisha ben Avuya saw that somebody was sitting in the presence of God, he assumed or thought possibly mistakenly that there were two gods. Obviously, nobody other than God would be sitting in the presence of God, would have to be another God. And that was his mistake. There were other explanations as well. But nevertheless, this is what happened. We could never have that switch turned off. And this is the unfortunate part of Kisisa. We have that problem. We never have to lose sight of the fact that we have that guiding light in our head. Should I or shouldn't I? And that's what we always have. And those of us who are lucky enough to be married to the right wife, as I started off tonight, even when we want to do something, if you're lucky enough to have the right spouse, she'll make sure that you walk the straight and narrow to say, don't do it. May we all have that kind of relationship in the family to keep us on the straight and narrow. Have a very good week, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much.